Hi, this is Dr. Bob Traeg. It's online and on the air. Yes, Martin Luther King Day. The white mayor of Ohio's largest city was there when two black activists in King's tradition were arrested. We'll be talking about that. In the studio with me is David Harewood, and he will be talking about representation at city council as well.
Death and hatred to mankind, poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah.
Martin Luther King Day breakfast, usually corporate sponsored with the mainstream Democratic Party members there, had a little controversy, and we've got a man who has written about it, David Harewood, well-known activist and artist, so political activist and artist in the studio. Welcome to the other side of the news, David.
Thanks for having me, Bob. Good to be here.
So you were, once again, compelled to step into the middle of a controversy.
I mean, it was another late-night rage writing, I suppose. I heard about the
some of my best writing, by the way.
Right, is it that that's usually the case? Right, yeah, usually it's in a rage where you're just going.
You're channeling. You're kind of channeling Martin Luther King or Malcolm X.
Or one of any number of people who've
Eugene
been on the
Victor
front
Debs.
I mean, Marshawn McCarroll.
Uh-huh.
Amber Evans. Actually, it's been a year. Since she put herself in the river. But, that morning of Martin Luther King Jr. holiday, I knew that the breakfast was going on. They were selling tickets at a pretty hefty price, and I'd seen Joyce Beatty at the Democratic Caucus a couple of weeks before that. Started seeing headlines on Facebook about the arrest. I think it was the Channel 10 story that broke first about Mia Santiago and Dakima Alexis being arrested for calling for justice for Julius at that breakfast.
And that issue, does there need to be justice for Julius?
I think there definitely needs to be clarity on what happened. There's always, whenever there's an incident of question with the police, which happens in this city, once every 4 months or so, there are almost always two narratives that come out. There's the one that comes out from the police directly, and then there's the one that starts to come out from the families and or witnesses, and it's...
And then there's the one that comes from the other side of the news, and we call it they Soleimani'd him, assassinated him, laid in wait, and shot the hell out of him.
I mean, they did shoot him, but I mean, there are... You always want to believe the parents, right? The question is whether or not, during that incident, a crime was being committed to the extent that the Columbus Police Department said that it was being committed. That wasn't my initial thought, though. My initial thought was, these two people come in, they are, yes, disrupting an act, right? A ceremony, right? But they're doing it in exactly the same way that the people honor the tradition of Martin Luther King. And not only
they're engaging
they
in civil disobedience.
Right.
And Nonviolent civil disobedience.
It's loud. But it has to be in order for any sort of change to be made, right? So not only are they being dragged out, but these people who are there who have spent money to watch Joyce Beatty wax poetic and nostalgic about...
When did she take that up?
Right.
The last time I dealt with Joyce Beatty, she was apologizing for Larry James, the man who ran Gitmo and then Abu Ghraib. She was welcoming him in Harvard's Human Rights Forum, tried to make sure that he would lose his license. He was hired at Wright State. The man who ran Gitmo again and Abu Ghraib. And she was defending him.
Wow.
Well, anyway, she's always something.
She's in an interesting position, right? So
she has a dense packed rig district that her husband negotiated for her. Otto Beatty.
Who used to be the head of the
Black Caucus.
Black Caucus.
And the
FCDP, right?
Yeah, and he also was the man who brought the loan sharking check cashing industry to Ohio.
So that's why she's talking about the...
Literally, she was sleeping with the lobbyists. Granted, it was her husband, who got an estimated $750,000 for bringing the loan sharks. The check cashing industry to Ohio.
But that's why she's put as part of her reelection campaign talking about banks, bank regulation, and credit unions. I keep getting test calls from Beatty, and I assume ODP, that compare her to, they pretend to be these nonpartisan objective pollsters, but then you start going, oh, wait, so you're taking the position of the incumbent and you're reading those talking points, and then you're taking the oppositional points of her primary competitor, obviously having been written by the ODP, obviously having been written by the incumbency, and pretend to be objective. It's really funny. I wrote a letter that night, that Monday, saying essentially that if you wanted to uphold Dr. King's legacy, then not only should the Kima and Mia be released, which they were the following day, but drop charges, records expunged if they exist. That I know of.
Well, we know the arrest records resist, and those can be expunged.
Oh, I can't.
So it's important, yeah.
Well, I I've been in some contact with the Kima, and they're being cautious at this point, which...
Probably listening to their attorneys that are telling them to be cautious.
Right.
I would tell them the same thing.
Right. But, time is only going to tell. I will say that Ginther is not known for bravery.
Harden is not known for bravery.
And Joyce Beatty, while she's known for being able to make a good speech that talks about the evils of the lack of black folks in positions of power in corporations, she doesn't really talk about the positions of people who are suffering in her own district.
I ran against her when I was a Green, got a couple percent of the vote, and I always found it odd because she came down here and would say, "What are these white boys doing in this neighborhood?" And I'm thinking, I've lived here. You live in Blacklick. I'm fighting the check cashing industry. You're bringing them in and they're sucking the blood out of the community.
Right. Well, I mean, some of that is... It's what I like to call the Berwick system, right?
I like that.
there's that marriage in the Columbus way with take the initial kind of NAACP talented 10th model, right?
Sure.
So you make the argument that if we have educated ourselves strongly enough, if we can read all of the same books, have all of the same levels of education, then you have to meet us on our level, right? Problem with that is it has morphed into this thing where they go, okay, well, we've moved out into the suburbs. We have our $500,000 homes. We have our 401ks that we're absolutely fine with. We don't have to worry about our kids, by the way. They don't.
No, they don't.
But we've got ours, and... as long as we don't rock that boat and we keep what we've got, it doesn't really matter to that to the set who've already gotten within the establishment. upholding the folks that they got into the positions to begin with, or at least that one would hope they got into those positions of power to begin with.
And again, that is indeed the Columbus model, along with the fact that you're beholden to developers and titans that don't live in the city. And as long as you continue to give them massive subsidies for building communities from scratch like New Albany or building soccer arenas, you can all get along.
What, you mean the benevolent Les Wexner?
Yes.
Everybody's friend.
Well, he's kind of a fair guy. You give him $100 million in water and sewage, and he donates $65 million to OSU. So, you know, I don't know what that makes him up. What, $25
million? 30. 35. I mean, that's a net positive of 35.
All right. So, but part of what they were protesting was also the fact that the police, after shooting to death a black male, ends up arresting his girlfriend.
Right.
Masonique,
right. They arrest her. They arrest her. They charge her with, I believe, murder. Yeah.
A felony murder.
With felony murder.
Which is a rule that says, if you were there during the committing of a felony and somebody dies, you can be charged with murder.
And she's still in... Wait, she pled guilty, didn't she? They talked her into pleading guilty, and she's got, what, 3 years? I mean, they still... Look, they tried her as a juvenile, at least, and not as an adult. Had she been male, they would have tried her as an adult.
No doubt.
She'd still be in prison past the age of 60.
Yeah, she would die. Well, a lot of prisoners that are in there, particularly the old law prisoners.
Right.
Who used to get your... I had one who got... His sentence was 18 to 125.
How do you get... how does that sort of breadth of sentencing happen, though, Bob? Like, I don't understand.
Oh, it used to happen, you know, were you good when you were inside? Were you a snitch? I mean, that's 18, you know. So a lot of it depended on how you acted once you got in the...
Oh, so that's what time off for good behavior and all of that, like...
Well, it really was up to the judge. We used to have, again, parole boards that had power.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, it was assumed that if you did certain things, you got 18-year minimum, you wouldn't get it, but 5 years, you'd go to the parole board and they'd tell you what you needed to do, you know, take some college classes, learn some skills, and then they let you out at 23. But if you didn't do all that, they would just keep extending it till you died.
Which, you know, keeps the money flowing in that system.
Yeah, in the prison industrial complex.
Mm-hmm.
So you're criticizing essentially a white mayor and two powerful black elected officials. You're criticizing them, or are you just saying, let them go, apologize?
I'm calling them to do the duty that they said that they wanted to do.
Like act like Martin Luther King?
Well, Martin Luther King was an outside agitator who was there to hold those in power accountable, right? If you were going to stand up on a lectern and say that you are honoring this legacy, then you should understand what right or wrong are, especially in the sense of what social justice movements come to. And if you're realizing that, then stand up for what's right. You already know what it is. It's not enough to simply wax nostalgic about the passage of the Civil Rights Acts of 64, 66, 68, right? It's not enough to... I was at a hearing 2 years ago. Remy had just been appointed, and Manuel Remy had just been appointed.
Columbus City Council member Manuel Remy,
and it was for a commemoration of the Fair Housing Act. Now, the year before that, and actually not the year before that, the election before that, in which he didn't even participate, there was a woman who ran in part on the housing disparity and got, I think it was 3,000 votes, something, somewhere around there. Her name was Jasmine Ayers. And he didn't go through that process. He actually lobbied internally to be appointed. He had been a member of one of the area commissions and worked his way through that system. So he was very happily partnering with members of city council and the city machine. But mentioned, and this was when I had been the first phase of the Everyday People for Positive Change campaign. I was the campaign director then in 2017. And I talked about, at that meeting, at that city council meeting, the irony of him holding this commemorative thing at an official council meeting with, I think it was 10 to 15 black real estate moguls of the area, where this guy's official listed position is running real estate in Upper Arlington. How he could do that after having been appointed to a seat that he didn't run for publicly, when the person who was pushed out from before, who lost two incumbents, who had also been appointed, had run on those very same things.
So that, though, is the Columbus way, and it'll be interesting, because Martin Luther King, that whole legacy, and again, that's counterposed. The AME Church runs essentially the critical people's version of the Martin Luther King breakfast. So there's a divide within the community, and that's the sort of corporatist.
Well, you've got the AME, you've got the NAACP, you've got the Urban League. There was a national meeting for the Urban League. I think that was 2 years ago. That I was working sound on it, and great irony is, the official shirts all said "I am the movement" on them, but they had the White Castle corporate logo on the side. I was running AV in a room which was about black business, because welcome to Columbus, they always talk about business, that was underwritten by the Walden Foundation.
So again, that is the Columbus way.
Yeah.
Make it corporate. So, you're with also Everyday People for Social Justice.
Everyday People for Positive Change.
For Social Justice. You're still for Social Justice.
True.
Officially, you're now Everyday People for Positive Change.
Right.
You just, it's just like a marketing ploy. It's like, okay, we're not about social, we are,
well,
but we won't put it that way, but positive change, well, I mean, because, they come down on you every time.
I mean, but every time we have pushed something through, whatever name we have been under, and we were in Everyday People for Positive Change before. It was Represent Columbus before that. But it has moved the needle along, right? So
now every time you're out there, challenging essentially the corporatist and the party machine, you've been able to push the debate over. So, but again, it's been a hard-fought battle. And the other side's trying to steal your ideas without your substance. It's like, we're gonna have some district.
Hold on, out there. We're gonna make this a district-based system.
Yeah, it's like you just gotta run at large.
Right.
Citywide, but you'll be in a district.
But you'll be in a district as long as we get
to
pick
it.
That'll
be like your district as long as you run citywide.
Right, but I mean, part of the essential issue with what they're proposing for 2021 is that it doesn't really fix the problem, right? So
that's why they're so excited about it.
Right, of course. It doesn't fix the problem at all.
It leaves the city in the hand of outside very wealthy developers and special interests.
Sure. Well, it allows the partnership to still control everything. So what we had done 2 years ago was we ran a petition that got about 42,000 signatures that did two things. It broke the city council into a district-based system, and where every member of city council would have to live in a district and be voted on by the people of that district, and it set actual campaign finance caps on what they could receive in donations as candidates. It also expanded from the current 7 to I think we had 10 seats. We had 10 seats in that initial. So city council. First the city attorney said, well, this breaks the single subject clause in the city charter, which really means that you have to, for a citizen initiative, only have one subject per petition.
Okay.
Except that our argument was that it was for the form and function of city council. Now,
All of it is election reform. And just a reminder, we're streaming online right now.
Streaming to you from the Indie Media Studios of the Free Press Network here on YouTube, but also available online at WGRN.org. Plus, listen to us on Columbus, Ohio's two volunteer-run low-power FM radio stations, Fridays at 5:30 p.m. on WGRN 94.1 The Green Renaissance, and Mondays 5:30 p.m. on WCRS 92.7 and 98.3.
And backing into that, that whole initiative had started with the Columbus Compact under the leadership of Jonathan Beard, who has since become the treasurer of this organization. Any donations can be made to everydaypeoplecolumbus.us. But they started a citizen initiative without operatives in it. They had this wide-ranging thing that didn't have enough valid signatures. So then the city council, under the council leadership of Andrew Ginther, writes this clause that says, oh, now if you're going to change the city council, it's got to be under it has to all cover a single subject. Fast forward to 15, we have Represent Columbus, which you were also consultation on, I believe, right, Bob?
Yes, I was.
Yeah. You were running as city attorney, probably the only guy I know of to put Black Lives Matter on your campaign slogan.
Yeah, the county prosecutor, Black Lives Matter.
Right. And we had...
And they're still blaming me. I read Columbus Monthly, the last issue, and they said I cost Zach Klein the election.
Zach Klein is now city attorney.
Yeah, but he didn't win. He lost to O'Brien as county prosecutor.
Look, man, the moment that Zach Klein becomes city attorney, he starts talking about the opioid crisis, and 2 days after he swears his oath of office, his Twitter feed is blowing up over shutting down drug houses in poor neighborhoods. So he's still trying to arrest his way out of the problem. It doesn't really fix anything. So I'm okay that he didn't get the county spot. So we went through one election where the city machine spent $1 million to shut us down in the last ad, in ads. When we launched as Everyday People Columbus, Everyday People for Positive Change, it was much more of a grassroots, but we were still funded. That lost because of that law, because of the single subject clause, because we set real...
Which is a tactic used by the Republicans at the state level.
Right.
Used by the Attorney General.
So, well, they're adopting repressive Republican policies
to stifle progressive Democratic activists.
What they will tell you is that that sort of repression works. And then they'll turn around and say that anyone who comes against them is automatically a Republican. I've dealt with it before. So that one gets shot down in the courts. Well, we had said we're going to do a district-based system and we're going to set actual campaign finance caps. So I think we were saying $500 per individual and a few thousand mm-hmm. per organization. Well, they turn around and say, hey, we're going to have a district-based city council system, but we're still going to vote on it at large. And, oh, yeah, we're going to have a campaign
finance. The whole city will vote for your district.
Right, right. So that the people who live on in Clintonville have as much to say about the representative of the South Side as Hilltop. And then they set a campaign finance limit of $13,000 per individual.
Uh-huh.
Which isn't a campaign finance limit at all. So now we have two petitions that we will probably roll out in the next month or so. One that sets campaign finance limits, and another that changes the number.
Open meeting law, and they closed the meetings for the first time in history.
Right.
1 minute, summarize for our listeners and viewers. What are you going to do? Are you going to bring us real districts, real wards?
So we'll have actual district-based systems where the people who live in that district get to pick the people who represent them within
that district.
It's
a novel idea. Like, it's a district, and the people in the district vote.
I know. It's crazy, isn't it?
It's just wild.
And then have a campaign finance limit so that you're not...
But how will the rich buy the election? Isn't money free speech?
Wow. did you just give me a Romney line? You did.
Yeah, well...
No, I mean, it in theory, it gives the power back to the people where it's supposed to belong.
All right, demosyncratia, the people rule. There's only one way for the people to rule. Rise up. Democracy is in the streets. Good luck.
Thank you,
David.
Death and hatred to mankind. Poisoning their brainwashed minds. Oh, Lord, yeah.